Hello, everyone. You know, someone asked me many years ago, why did Mr. Armstrong use the 19-year time cycle, and what does it mean? Now, there are two ways the 19-year time cycle has been used in God's church: as a significant number, or prophetic number, and astronomically in calculating God's calendar. In God's church, certain numbers have a numerical significance to them. Some examples are 3, finality of judgment; 7, perfection — we just heard about that for the 7th month, Tishri; 10, completeness; 12, organizational beginnings; 40, trial or testing. The number 19 can describe a prophetic time cycle of years. In Mr. Armstrong's autobiography, he describes some facts that show how God's hand was involved, and Jesus began the actual teaching and training of his original disciples for carrying his gospel to the world in the year of AD 27. This is what he said: precisely 100 time cycles later, in 1927, he began my intensive study and training for carrying out his same gospel to all nations of today's world. It is important that we realize the significance of 100 time cycles, he continues. God set the earth, sun, and moon in their orbits to mark off divisions of time on the earth. One revolution of the earth is a day. One revolution of the moon around the earth is a lunar month. One revolution of the earth around the sun is a solar year. But the earth, the sun, and the moon come into almost exact conjunction only once in 19 years. Thus, 19 years mark off one complete time cycle. Mr. Armstrong continues, now consider the facts. It was on the day of Pentecost, the year was AD 31, exactly 100 time cycles later. After 3.5 years of intensive study and training, Christ ordained me to preach the same gospel of the kingdom in all the world as a witness to all nations. This ordination took place at or very near the day of Pentecost, 1931. Christ started out his original apostles preaching the very gospel of the kingdom of God, which he sent by him, and which he had taught the apostles in the year AD 31. For exactly one 19-year time cycle, this preaching was confined to the continent where it started, Asia. After precisely one 19-year time cycle, AD 50, Christ opened a door for the Apostle Paul to carry the same gospel to Europe. End quote. Now, these are some of the examples of how the number 19 has been used as a significant number in God's church. However, there is a difference in how the astronomical 19-year time cycle is applied when calculating the biblical calendar, as we'll see a little later. Mr. and Mrs. Armstrong knew that they needed to keep the annual holy days way back in the late 1920s. They needed to figure out when to keep them, and this meant that they needed God's calendar so that they knew which days of the year to keep. They kept the holy days for 7 years as best they could, although not understanding the full meaning of them. And Sardis here at that time knew about observing the weekly Sabbath, but never observed the annual holy days. Now, why will we be here 2 days from now keeping the Feast of Trumpets? How do we know that we will be keeping the correct time or day? Do we only look at a card or a printed sheet or go to certain websites and accept what it says there, as the proper timing for the holy days and festivals. In 1 Thessalonians 5:21, God says we are to prove all things and hold fast to what is good. So let us see how God has applied the astronomical 19-year time cycle as the most important basic feature for calculating his calendar. This, in turn, will make it available for us the right timing to observe his holy days and festivals. So we need to go back to the beginning. Let's turn back to Genesis. During the creation week, we'll read in chapter 1 and verse 14 to 18. It says, "Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons, and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth, and it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the night or the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good." Now I'm going to read a little bit those same scriptures in a Moffat version. He does a real good explanation, especially in some areas here that's important. He says, "Let there be lights in the vault of heaven to separate day from night, to mark out the sacred seasons, the days and the years. Let them shine in the vault of heaven to shed light on the earth. And so it was. For God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, the lesser light together with the stars to rule the night. God set them in the vault of heaven to shed light upon earth, to rule the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good." Let's turn to Psalms 104. Let's back this up. That's Psalms 104. We'll read verse 19. Short verse, but it explains here very important. "He appointed the moon for seasons." That's the same word in Genesis 1:14. It's a Hebrew word, moedim. "The sun knows it's going down." Now, these scriptures show how the sun and the moon were set in motion, providing day and night, letting them serve to mark the seasons or festivals, days and years. Because of this, God's calendar is constructed based on both the lunar and solar cycles. Also, from the beginning of creation, God's holy day plan was revealed to mankind and patterned or fit within the biblical calendar seasons of spring, summer, autumn, all around Jerusalem. In the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, the 1967 version, Mr. Armstrong states, page 146, says, "In ancient biblical times, a year was figured on a basis of 12 30-day months, previous to the time in Moses' day, when God gave his people the sacred calendar, the 30-day month was used." This is all prior to Moses. From the beginning of creation. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 7. And let's see what this is talking about. Noah, of course, right here. Genesis 7 and verse 11. It says, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, on that day all the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened." And let's turn to, now knowing that, to chapter 8, and we'll read verses 3 and 4. says, "And the waters receded continually from the earth. At the end of the 150 days, the waters decreased. Then the ark rested in the seventh month, the 17th day of the month, on the Mount of Ararat." So notice, the flood started on the 17th day of the second month. At the end of 150 days, the ark rested on Mount Ararat on the 17th day of the seventh month. That was 5 months to the day. 5 30-day months are precisely 150 days. So months then were 30-day months. Now from the time of creation till the flood, God could have, although we're not positively sure, established a perfect 360-day year with 12 months, exactly 30-day lengths. Then that would have meant that the solar and the lunar year cycles would have been exactly the same. It's possible, and there is some proof to back that up. So let's turn to Leviticus 23. We'll come right into God's festivals, and we'll read verses 1, 2, and 4. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, the feasts of the Eternal, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts." In verse 4, "These are the feasts of the Eternal holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times." That's the same wording in Genesis 1:14. And let's turn to Exodus chapter 13. Back to Exodus chapter 13. And we'll read verse 10 there. Exodus 13 and verse 10. It says, talking about the festivals here at Feast of Unleavened Bread, "You shall therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year." So as a model nation back then and to all nations during the millennium, which is coming up, God commanded Israel to observe the holy days at His appointed times within their seasons from year to year and also in definite months. In other words, the phases of the moon determine the progression of the lunar month. Each year, God's annual festivals from the Hebrew calendar are either connected to the new moon at the beginning of the month or the full moon in the middle of the month. The Feast of Trumpets falls on the new moon, and the full moon starts the Feast of Tabernacles, just coming up. Let's turn to Psalms 81, chapter 81. We'll read verse 3, Psalm 81. We just heard about this in the sermonette. "Blow the trumpet at the time of the new moon, at the full moon on our solemn feast day." And let's turn to Leviticus, back to Leviticus chapter 23. And we'll read about this, and we'll read verses 24 and 34 of Leviticus 23. "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation." That's the capital new moon. And verse 34, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days to the Eternal." That's the full moon. So the sun and moon determine the physical days, the lunar months, and the solar year according to God's physical laws that govern the universe. But we see, more importantly, that when connected with God's spiritual laws, they determine God's festivals, and the festivals reveal to us His plan, God's plan for building His family for all mankind. And He set these in motion from the very beginning of the creation. But first, we do need to ask, since this is God's calendar, Who did he give to be the calendar specialist? Is it up to us? To individually, as us just as individually, or a religious group, or a congregation, or a council to decide? Who has this authority from God to decide his calendar? Now the answer is found in Acts chapter 7. Let's go there. Acts chapter 7, and we'll read verses 37 to 38. 37-38. Okay, this is that Moses who said to the children of Israel, "The Eternal your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Him you shall hear." This is he, Moses, who was in the congregation in the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him on Mount Sinai, and with our fathers, the one who received the living oracles to give to us. Israel was given the oracles. Now this is Israel was given the oracles or sayings of God. And the oracles of God, which included his calendar, were given to Moses, who gave them to Israel. And the Bible states in 1 Chronicles 12 and verse 32, when David was made king over all Israel, that of the children of Issachar were men that had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do. That's what it says there. So God made that happen with men and gave them special understanding of how to keep the times, which was God's calendar, even back then and then further back from there to Moses. But we do know that Israel did not keep God's commandments and statutes, and due to their rebellion against him, in 721 BC, were taken into captivity by the Assyrians and lost their identity, including the knowledge of God's sacred calendar. Then who did? Who kept them? Who continued them? God gave the Jews of the tribe of Judah the responsibility of preserving the oracles, which had split away from the nation of Israel. Even though rebellious and also taken in captivity later by the Babylonians, the Jews still did not lose their identity and kept that advantage of preserving God's word when they returned to Jerusalem 70 years later. And that's as it states, and we'll turn to the Romans chapter 3. Let's see what it says here. Romans 3, and we'll just read the first two verses of Romans 3. It says, "What advantage then has the Jew? Or what is the profit of circumcision? Much in every way, chiefly because to them were committed the oracles of God. Through God's prophets, the Jews came to understand why they were taken captive for breaking God's laws, and therefore became very strict and meticulous in preserving the oracles of God, which include the Hebrew calendar." And let's turn to Nehemiah chapter 8, just as a chapter 8 and verse 2, talking about Ezra. It says, and even talking about the day that's coming up for us, shows that they kept those holy days. "So Ezra the priest brought the law before the assembly of men and women and all who could hear with understanding on the first day of the seventh month." Feast of Trumpets. Now the oracles preserved by God through the Jewish people were, and that was the Holy Scriptures or the Old Testament Scriptures, as we know, the Sabbath day, and his calendar. Now, the weekly Sabbath is revealed by divine revelation, by God in Genesis 2. The calendar, however, which includes the seven annual holy days and festivals, needs to be calculated which the Jews were given that responsibility. Except for Pentecost, the holy days were to be observed on set calendar dates each year. So although the Jews had the responsibility to preserve the correct calendar, and they've done this very well, the interpretation behind the calendar days was not to be determined by them. Only God retains the right to tell us in His Word, the Bible, what date on the calendar to keep His festivals. And Mr. Armstrong many years ago concluded that Romans chapter 3 and verse 1 and 2 showed that the calendar, along with the Hebrew text of the Old Testament, was among the oracles of God. So what advantage do the Jews have even today? They preserve the oracles, which includes the knowledge of calculating the Jewish or Hebrew calendar. And I have a good news letter of 1940. This was a letter written in 1940 to the brethren by Mr. Armstrong. And I'm just going to summarize a little bit. He went into a huge study in the calendar because they needed to know what those days were back then and when to keep them, the holy days. And he's zeroing in on the 14th of the first month, Abib or Nisan, which that's the first month for Passover. But what is interesting is that he's saying the real problem is to figure when is the first day of the month, Abib, that first day, in order to figure the rest of them. And I'll show you some concluding remarks he gives. God did not commit His oracles or the preservation of His times to profane history or to the Roman Catholics, but to the Israelites, and they have been preserved by the Jews. And after a thorough study of the Bible, of the Hebrew calendar, of history, and every angle, after going into the matter with all the Eugene brethren and other brethren who have made a special study of this question, we have unanimously agreed that the Hebrew calendar has been preserved correct by the Jews. Later in God's church, Ambassador College had a class entitled Computing the Biblical Calendar. It was a hands-on approach for interested students to understand the details. And I mean, it gets into very big detail of how to construct God's calendar in much the same way and procedure the Jews construct their biblical calendar today. Now let's look briefly, the rest of the sermon, at this hands-on approach now, in a summary way, as if we were one of these students. Now, once Israel was delivered from Egypt, He had to straighten them out as to time. And let's turn to Exodus chapter 12. We'll start this with Exodus chapter 12. Verse 2 of Exodus 12, talking to Moses when they were coming out of Egypt, he says, "This month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you." And let's turn to chapter 34 of Exodus. Chapter 34, and we'll read verse 18 of 34. It says, "The feast of unleavened bread you shall keep. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, as I commanded you, in the appointed time of the month of Abib. For in the month of Abib you came out from Egypt." So that's the first month Abib is defined. But we have to also remember that the beginning of the biblical year must start in the spring season. This was lunar, according to the new moon. But it also has to start in the spring season, the first day of the first month, Abib. Now, this was God's way of keeping the annual holy days and festivals in their proper appointed times, as God instructs us in Leviticus 23. Now, I want to go over it. Now, it was mentioned earlier about a calendar, and this is the calendar that the church uses. And the Vaughns create this. It's a very good calendar. It goes through each of the months of the year, the Gregorian year, which we use. But it has interlaid on there the Hebrew calendar as well, along with all the annual holy days and festivals. It's a very good calendar that they create. Now, here are some of the scriptures that are in God's Word that identify some of those Hebrew months of God's calendar. We're going to go through these scriptures. Abib, now we just, the first month we read through here, let's go to another scripture in Deuteronomy chapter 16 and verse 1. Deuteronomy 16 and verse 1, it says, observe the month of Abib, and keep the Passover to the Eternal your God, for in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. So there's the first month, Abib. Then there's another month, Iyar. That's the second month. And let's turn to 1 Kings. God identifies these months for us in here so that we know we're keeping the correct calendar. 1 Kings chapter 6, and we'll read verse 1. It says, it came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, which is really Iyar, or Ayer, they call it the same. It's April or May of our year, which is the second month that he began to build the house of the Eternal. So Abib is from March to April time frame, Iyar, April to May. Now let's look at the eighth month, which is from October to November, and that's Heshvan. Let's turn to first, just go right over here to verse 38 of 1 Kings 6. Verse 38. It says, in the fourth year, the foundation of the house of the Eternal was laid. In the month of Ziv, verse 37. Let's go to verse 38. We just talked about this. In the 11th year, in the month of Bull. Now, Bull is really, it's the October-November time frame, the rainy season of the year. And it is Heshvan in your margins. Heshvan, which is the eighth month. The house was finished in all its details according to its plans. So he was 7 years in building it. Of course, that's Solomon building God's house. Now let's go to Elul. Well, that's going to be the sixth month from August to September time frame, and we'll go to Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 6. Nehemiah chapter 6. We'll read verse 15. It says, so the wall, this is Nehemiah when they were building the wall around Jerusalem. So the wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. That's the sixth month. Now let's go to Tebeth. That's the 10th month from December to January. And that's found over in Esther. Esther chapter 2 and verse 16. Chapter 2, verse 16 of Esther reads, so Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And let's look over here in chapter 3 and verse 7, and we'll find Adar, which is the 12th month, February and March time frame, the last month of God's calendar. And that's Ezra 3 and verse 7. It says, in the first month, which is the month Nisan, that's the same thing as Abib, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast pur, that is, the lot, before Haman to determine the day of the month, until it fell on the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, the 12th month, the last month of God's calendar. And we'll look at chapter 8. Just look at that one more time. Chapter 8 and verse 12. It says, in one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Now let's go to the third month, Sivan, from May to June. And we're right here in Esther chapter 8, and let's just go back here to verse 9 of Esther 8. It says, so the king's scribes were called at that time in the third month, which is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews and the satraps, and it goes on further down. But the key is, that was Sivan, the third month. And now let's go to month 11, Shabbat, and that's from January to February, and let's turn to Zechariah chapter 1. Zechariah chapter 1. And we'll read verse 7 of chapter 1. On the 24th day of the 11th month, which is the month Shabbat, in the second year of Darius, the word of the Eternal came to Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo, the prophet. So there we have several months identified. And the others, I'm going to show you right here. I think we sent out a file for everyone. I have a board copy of it here, but you could follow it there. But I'll just show you quickly, briefly, to show you all the months, and that's right along here, along a common year. This is the common year, 12-month year of a Jewish calendar. And it goes through all 12 months with their days, the number of days in each. So when setting up an accurate calendar, you have to relate the days to the lunar month and the 12 lunar months to the solar year. Each month of God's calendar starts with the faint crescent of the new moon, which means making new. And let's turn to Numbers chapter 10. Numbers chapter 10. Numbers chapter 10 and verse 10. It states, also in the day of your gladness, in your appointed feasts, and at the beginning of your months, you shall blow the trumpets over your burnt offerings. And this is all the sacrifice that go with it. But the thing is at the beginning of your months. And now let's turn to Psalms 81. Psalms 81 and verse 3 to back this up. Psalm 81 and verse 3. This is the beginning of the months. It says, blow the trumpet at the time of the new moon. That's a capital new moon. At the full moon. On our solemn feast day. Now, the Hebrew calendar, the average length of time between the monthly new moons is slightly more than 29 and a half days. Therefore, one month in general is 30 days, and the next month has 29 days in an alternating, consistent manner. That's the way this was handled, to make that average of 29 and a half. This is all necessary in keeping the calendar accurate so that the lunar months are consistent within that solar year. Some other minor adjustments to this pattern will be It'll take care of the remaining fraction of the month. Now each solar year, we know in our calendar, is 365 and a quarter days. The Hebrew calendar year normally has 12 lunar months, that common year, summing up to only 354 days. That's interesting. There's 11 day difference here. And unless something was done to fit within the 19 solar year time cycle, the Hebrew calendar, starting with the month of Abib, would slip about 11 days behind the seasons each year. And would further slip over a whole month behind the seasons within just a few years. Several years later, the Hebrew calendar would slip back into the winter. So to solve this difficulty, an extra 13th month had to be inserted near the end of the common 12-month Hebrew calendar. And it's called an intercalary year with an intercalary month. And I have that handout, have the example on the same chart. It shows the actual 13-month intercalary year with all the months. And at the bottom, you'll see that 13th, 8R1 and an 8R2 added in there, that 13th month. That's an intercalary year with 13 months. Now, the calendar was also consistent with God's command to keep those festivals and appointed times throughout the year connected to the annual grain harvest in the whole region surrounding Jerusalem. Otherwise, that first holy day would occur in the winter time instead of the spring harvest season if they didn't keep adding and keeping up with the third, with that intercalary year at various times. So knowing this, it was necessary that a 13th month be added and inserted every 2 or 3 years during the 19-year time cycle. That's important. Every 2 or 3 years of the 19-year time cycle, God intended that the 13th month, called 8R1, be added to the calendar to bring the lunar year back into close agreement with the solar year. This 13th month, called an intercalary month, was added, and this is important, every 3rd, 6th, 8th, 11th, 14th, 17th, and 19th year, which are the long 13 months within that 19-year time cycle. Now, I have in those handouts, which is quite interesting, this our current 19-year time cycle. It's a chart with the intercalary years identified. It's a very nice chart. They're identified in purple, as you'll see. And it starts in 2016, was the beginning, the Feast of Trumpets there, and it goes all the way over to 2035 and ends at the Feast of Trumpets there. 19-year time cycle, and each of these purple, identified purple, they are those intercalary years with the added 13th month. Now, the other normal years within the cycle, they are those common 12-month years that we just saw, too. And 7 times in the 19-year time cycle, this 13th month must be added to keep the year in accord with the seasons. That's the purpose. Then the time cycle is repeated over and over again, 19 years out, further out. So to summarize, there are 12 common years and 7 intercalary years that always make up the complete 19-year time cycle. This prevented the first month from drifting back into the winter time period. And this formula keeps the biblical year within its proper seasons. And God gave certain men long ago special understanding as to when to add these extra months, and is continuing today. Now, right now, we are in the third year of the current 19-year time cycle that you just saw on the chart, which began on the Feast of Trumpets, October 3rd, 2016, and will continue until the Feast of Trumpets, 2035. And this year, 2019, is an intercalary year we just identified, which has that extra 13th month added. And on the calendar this year, which they have, that's exactly what you see on here. You see that extra 8R in there, 8R, 8R1, and 8R2. It's the extra month. So how would you go about setting up a calendar from year to year so that it would be based on God's Word to keep the holy days and festivals in their seasons and at the right appointed times? As it states in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 40, God has a certain order for determining His holy days. And God is consistent and predictable in His ways, and it was God's responsibility to see that they were preserved down to our time. Now consider these facts. The new moon always starts each lunar month. The Feast of Trumpets, as we heard in the sermonette, which is the new moon, capital new moon, is the focal point in determining the calendar and calculating all the other festivals and holy days. The Feast of Trumpets, which is the new moon, is the focal point in determining the calendar and calculating all the other festivals and holy days. Once the Feast of Trumpets is calculated and fixed as the first calendar day of the seventh month each year, which is the first of Tishri, then all the spring holy days and fall holy days are determined starting from this date. This all happens within the successive years of the 19-year time cycle. Now, it was determined that the number of days of the first 7 months of the calendar, in which occur all the annual holy days, is set and never changes from Abib to Tishri, those first 7 months. Therefore, any other calendar adjustments can only be made to the remaining months outside of that time frame, which is exactly what the Jews do if there's a need to do any other type of adjustments. So the first 7 months, like we talked about, have alternating fixed days. The first month, Abib has 30. The second month, which is Iyar, has 29. The third month, which is Sivan, has 30. Fourth month, which is Tammuz, has 29. Fifth month, Av, has 30. Sixth month, Elul, has 29. And the seventh month, which is Tishri, has 30. This is interesting. So we see that the total number of days from the first day of Tishri back to the first day of Abib is always 177 days, exactly. So according to God's calendar, in 2019, the coming Monday, September 30, is the first of Tishri, which is the calculated fixed date for the Feast of Trumpets. And if we count back 177 days from September 30th, we will arrive at the first of Abib, April 6th of this calendar year. And starting from there, all the annual holy days and festivals can be calculated according to the biblical requirements of Leviticus 23. And here's an example, of course, the 14th day of the first of Abib is Passover. That's April 19th now. And the Day of Atonement, 10 days from the Feast of Trumpets, that's October 9th, from the first of Tishri it's from. Now the church uses some calendar, the same calendar that the Jews have preserved, and we know that's what they use. They also include postponements, in which those are simply calendar adjustments that determine which day should be proclaimed the first day of Tishri, which is the Feast of Trumpets. That's what these postponements are. They're simply calendar adjustments to figure out this day, the new moon, the seventh month. And we'll summarize some examples here of those postponement rules. The first is the calculated faint crescent of the moon must occur on the Day of Trumpets, which is the first day of Tishri. It must occur on that day, the faint crescent of a new moon, just coming out of the actual molad, which is what the Hebrews use. And second, the calculated first day of Tishri cannot fall on a Sunday, a Wednesday, or Friday. It is postponed to the following day, and that is Monday, Thursday, or Saturday. This means that the Feast of Trumpets can only fall on a Monday, a Tuesday, a Thursday, or a Saturday. And you can prove this if you go back to all of the years and look and study into that. You'll find out that they always fall on these days. They never fall on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. That's due to these postponement rules. And the autumn is a time of general harvest, and people are working and gathering in that later harvest right up to the day or two before the Feast of Tabernacles. And this is what was going on way back, even after Moses' time. The harvest was so important and was a time of ingathering, and spiritually speaking, the latter harvest denotes that complete harvest of all the people on the earth after Christ returns. And this harvesting is so important that nothing is allowed to interfere with it except God's weekly and annual Sabbaths, which are even more important, both of which are days of rest and need to have preparation days. So the Feast of Trumpets cannot fall on a Sunday. It must be postponed to Monday, because the weekly Sabbath of solemn rest would then be a preparation day, which is not allowed. The Feast of Trumpets cannot fall on a Wednesday. It must be postponed to Thursday, because 10 days later, the Day of Atonement, which required no work at all, no manner of work, would fall on a Friday, the preparation day for the weekly Sabbath. The Feast of Trumpets cannot fall on a Friday. It must be postponed to Saturday, because this would cause the Feast of Trumpets, a holy day, to fall on a preparation day for the weekly Sabbath, which is not allowed. Now, I have a copy of, I went through a hand calculation according to the class they had there, and it gets into the details, the finer, lower details, how they do it, but it came up to, when you calculate it, this year, it came up to the first day of the week was the first of Tishri. And of course, the first day of the week is Sunday. So it had to be postponed to Monday. And that's what we're observing now, Monday, for the feast this year. Now, there's two other postponement rules, and they occur less frequent than the primary two that we just mentioned. And they regulate the number of days which affect only the common years of God's calendar. So, all of these postponement rules are necessary, and this is important, and only apply to setting the first calendar day of the 7th month of Tishri. That's what they're for. We have shown how the number 19 has been used as a significant number in the church history. Also, how very clear it is that God has provided mankind with His holy calendar, a lunar solar calendar that is calculated on the basis of the 19-year time cycle, with the Feast of Trumpets truly being the focal point in determining His calendar. He has preserved that calendar through the Jewish people, and through them, God has given us His sacred calendar, so we could worship and honor Him by observing His commanded holy days and festivals. So let's turn to Ezekiel chapter 20. Ezekiel chapter 20. And we'll read verse 12. It says here in Ezekiel 20 and verse 12, it says, "Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, that they might know that I am the Eternal who sanctifies them." And then verse 20, it says, "Hallow my Sabbaths, and they will be a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord your God."